They are elected by you. I am elected by you. I am constrained as they are constrained by a system that our founders put in place.
The founders separated power because they knew it was the best way to protect our citizens.
Keep your eye on the ball. Structure is destiny.
This is Necessary and Proper, the podcast of the Federalist Society's Article 1 Initiative. All views expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Federalist Society.
On January 21st, 2021, the Federalist Society's Columbia Student Chapter and Article 1 Initiative co-hosted a Zoom webinar on Congress and the administrative state. The following is Professor Christopher J. Walker's portion of the presentation. We hope you enjoy.
Today, I just want to start out by thanking the Columbia Law School Federalist Society for inviting me to come speak about Congress and the administrative state and the role of Congress in reigning in the administrative state is kind of my thesis or what I'm going to kind of pitch to you today. We planned this event before the elections and even before January 6, 2021. So I just wanted to kind of capture, it would be odd of me not to at least start with what happened on January 6, 2021 before I get into the substance. And I'm someone who has always been fascinated with Capitol Hill, and I've worked there a number of different times in college for then minority leader, my home state Senator Harry Reid. A couple of years ago, I took a leave of absence and worked for Senator Hatch on the Judiciary Committee for the Gorsuch confirmation. And the last 3 or 4 years I've chaired a committee, a judicial advisory commission for Senators Portman and Brown here in Ohio. And for me, the Capitol is a really, quite frankly, a sacred place. It's the heart of our democracy and who we are as people in the rule of law. And so not surprisingly, watching what happened on January 6th was one of the worst days of my life, at least when it comes to our country and democracy. And seeing what happens there. This picture was shown a lot in a lot of the media coverage. I'm 90% sure this is the President Pro Tem's office where Senator Hatch was President Pro Tem when I worked for him. I remember looking out on the mall from this window quite often, especially meeting with Senator Hatch. I just, you know, wanted to just flag this and quite frankly condemn it. There's nothing less democratic or rule of law value or from a constitutional conservative's perspective than storming the Capitol on the day that the election is certified. Storming the Capitol any day, but particularly on that day. It's not just symbolically anti-democratic. It is a violation of our separation of powers and the role of elections and democracy in our system. And I know the Federalist Society as a national organization doesn't take positions and doesn't allow chapters to take positions on anything policy. I didn't even see a statement from them when 9/11 happened. But I want to take a position very clearly that there's just no way that this is consistent with rule of law values, separation of powers, or anything else in our constitutional system, and it's an assault on that, and one of the darkest days, quite frankly, for our democracy that I've experienced in my lifetime. So just want to kind of get that out there and let you know, I know that this is something that all of us have struggled with watching and doing. It's a stain on our democracy that will last far beyond this January along those lines. So now switching to the substance of what I want to talk about is that we live in an era of lawmaking by regulation. In decades past, we saw most of our lawmaking done by legislation and to some degree by judicial interpretation. But things have really, I think, dramatically changed in this era, whether we're talking the era starting in the 1930s or 70s or even just more modern day. There's a Facebook post I show my legislation and regulation students every year that Senator Lee put up in 2014 that I think captures this. It's not a perfect capture, but it gives you a sense of where we're at. And what he has is those three shelves are everything that's in the Federal Register, all the rules, notices of rules, regulations. And then at the very top of that, above it, is everything that Congress passed in that same year. If you want to get a better sense, and I'm pulling these from the last 2 years of the Obama administration just to give you a sense of where it's at. Congress passed in those 2 years, 329 public laws, 3,000 pages. In the Federal Register, there were over 7,000 final rules, almost 180,000 total pages, but 60,000 of those were dealing with final rules themselves. Now, this is an imperfect capture of this, of course, because you know, Congress might pass a rule on one page that has a dramatic effect, you know, much more than the 500 word detailed, you know, rule that the agency passes, but it still gives you a sense of where most lawmaking happens today. It's not up on Capitol Hill. It's at federal agencies through the notice and comment process. Another kind of fun way to think of this is if you're trying to read every page, every word in the Code of Federal Regulations, it would take you over 3 years to get through all of that, including more than a million regulatory restrictions. And so it's not, I don't think it's, I don't have a hard argument to make that we live in an era of lawmaking by regulation instead of lawmaking by legislation. Just to kind of give one more example, let me maybe return to this later. The Regulatory Accountability Act that was proposed has been proposed over the years by Senators Portman and Heitkamp at the time, has a number of different provisions, and we might talk about some of these later, but I circled the last one. And this is the most controversial provision in this proposed legislation, that it would require more formal kind of hearing-like rulemaking for major rules that are over $100 million. There are a lot of exceptions there, and for high-impact rules that are over $1 billion. And I just highlight that even in a piece of bipartisan legislation that's supported by a lot of Republicans, we're already assuming that agencies should be making rules that have an impact of more than $1 billion, as opposed to that being a decision that Congress should make instead of a federal agency. And so what I want to kind of just give you a survey of today is what can Congress do about this? To kind of combat the role, this era we live in of lawmaking by regulation. And I'll just talk briefly about six different options. The first option is do nothing, right? Maybe for a lot of you, you view this as a feature and not a bug. There's some good arguments we can have there. Some folks think that, you know, expert bureaucrats should be the ones that are making our major decisions and not elected representatives. Others may argue that Congress is not representative anymore for a variety of different reasons, whether it's districting or too much of a weight with the Senate and House. And there are a lot of different arguments there. I'm obviously not in that camp. I think it is a bug and not a feature that most of our lawmaking happens at federal agencies and not Congress, especially major decisions. So if you agree with me on that, there are kind of five different tools or approaches that you can have. First is we have the traditional oversight toolkit. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but if you're interested in exploring this further, Josh Chaffetz has a terrific book called Congress's Constitution, where he outlines the various tools Congress has under the Constitution to rein in the administrative state, to combat the executive branch more generally. I did a book review of this in the Michigan Law Review a few years back. And I kind of have this chart that just summarizes his six tools. There's obviously the power of the purse, which is appropriation, spending, budgeting. There's the personnel power that we're going to see a lot of in the next few weeks with Congress through the president's nomination of agency heads and other principal officers at agency. Congress can exercise oversight by asking for commitments from those agency heads about how they're going to run the agency, from withholding holding hearings or the like on those agency heads until they get a commitment that the agency is going to act in a certain way. Of course, under that category, you also have things like removal and impeachment. And then the third one is contempt of Congress, that Congress has the ability to hold agency officials in contempt if they don't actually comply with the oversight functions that are being required of them. Chaffetz also has a number of soft powers, freedom of speech, internal discipline, go read the book. The last one, the Cameral Rules, though, plays a really important role. Under the Constitution, Congress has the ability to set up its own rules. And what's it's done through that is created committees with oversight that can do investigations, that can subpoena documents and testimony, and exercise other types of oversight tools. I don't understate this. This is a very powerful tool that Congress has to rein in and control the administrative state. I've written separately a number of different articles. I think there's some problems with Congress acting this way and not also legislating, because it's not the collective Congress, oftentimes committees or committee chairs that exercise this power, but it's still a really important tool that Congress has. The second one we're also going to be talking about a lot in the next few weeks. This is the Congressional Review Act. The Congressional Review Act allows Congress to invalidate an agency rule that has been enacted within the last 60 days. One of the kind of key features of this is that the filibuster doesn't apply. It's a fast track approach where both the House and Senate just pass a resolutions on simple majority. At the end of the Obama administration and the beginning of the Trump administration, you saw a lot of rules being invalidated under the Congressional Review Act. It doesn't just invalidate the rule, it also prohibits the agency from enacting a rule that is substantially the same as that rule. Maybe we can talk a little bit more what that means. We're gonna see this used a lot. It wasn't used very often before the Trump administration. It'll definitely be used a lot here in the first months of the Biden administration to go back through the last 60 days of rules of the last Congress. Okay, so there's that. Another tool is regulatory reform legislation. In other words, tinkering with the Administrative Procedure Act and other statutes that govern the way agencies regulate. I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on this here. I wanna flag that the US Department of Justice issued a report last year on modernizing the Administrative Procedure Act that goes through a lot of this. I've written a couple articles. The first was looking at some of the reform legislation that had been put up by Republicans back at the start of the Trump administration. And the second one is one I have forthcoming that actually just tracks, gives you a survey of how the Administrative Procedure Act's text departs from how it actually works in practice today, both as a matter of judicial doctrine and as a matter of regulatory practice. In case you want to get a sense of why the Administrative Procedure Act might need to be modernized and the like. There's a number of bills, including that Regulatory Accountability Act, that attempt to do that. Quite a few of them garner at least some bipartisan support, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the current administration when both houses are controlled by Democrats. Okay, the next one is, well, they could actually legislate more, right? This might be the easy one that you might think of, that it's, you know, an option that you can actually do legislation and not just rely on oversight and Congressional Review Act to do this. This is hard these days to actually get Congress to legislate, to revisit statutes that govern federal agencies. In an article that Jonathan Adler and I published this last year in the Iowa Law Review, we take a pretty ambitious approach here. And you know, so much of the arguments about delegation these days are focused on a non-delegation, are focused on constitutional arguments, you know, that Congress can't delegate broad, you know, unbridled lawmaking authority to federal agencies. And in this article, we kind of take a step back and say that that is a problem, sure, but another problem is the temporal aspect of delegation. In other words, a lot of the statutes that govern federal agencies haven't been revisited by Congress in decades. We might be talking about the Clean Air Act, for instance, that, you know, agencies are forced to fashion the provision of the Clean Air Act to confront completely new challenges that the enacting Congress hadn't even anticipated, in particular, global warming or greenhouse gases. Or take, for instance, the Federal Communications Act. I hear that former chairman Pai spoke to you just a while ago. You know, that act didn't at all envision the internet and how it should be regulated. And so in this article, we make an argument that the temporal aspects of delegation are a problem, and that one way to fix it is to encourage Congress to legislate more often, to revisit those provisions. And if I were given a different talk, I'd give you my pitch on why Congress should consider a number of different tools to require mandatory reauthorization of key statutes, the government federal agencies. So that's another tool that you have. And the last tool that could help restore Congress's role is the role of appropriations. So when you're thinking about Congress, they do two different related things when it comes to legislation. They pass legislation that substantially authorizes agencies to do something, but that doesn't actually become effective until they also appropriate funding for that. Now, your own amazing professor, Jillian Metzger, has a piece coming out in your Home Institutions Law Review later this year that dives into the role of appropriations. And she argues that because legislation is so difficult, substantive legislation is so difficult to get through Congress, that we should be using appropriations more as a tool for Congress and the president to control the administrative state and to shape regulation. I think this is a tool, and if in the Q&A we can talk about this a little bit more. It's obviously a tool that can be used. It worries me that it's used this way, and I worry it gets abused. Oftentimes Congress, for instance, instead of going through oversight and substantive legislation, will add riders to change what agencies can do in appropriations legislation. And that in my mind is, it can become problematic because it bypasses the normal way that Congress functions when it's trying to change an agency's mission and organic statute. Another issue is that it tends to be more reactive and not proactive. I want a Congress that's proactively evaluating what agencies are doing and what they should be doing and providing additional instructions that way. Whole different conversation we could have. If Professor Metzger were here, this would be a really fun one to have, especially she's been thinking about it so deeply over the last few years for this piece. But if you're just kind of taking a step back, you know, these are the tools. If you think that Congress not lawmaking or not being the primary lawmaker is a problem, you know, a bug and not a feature, there are a number of things Congress can do to address that. Now, I don't think any of these by itself is going to be enough. Ultimately, we as a people are going to have to value the role of Congress more in making the major values judgments in our laws and not just delegating those to federal agencies. But these are some of the means to advancing that ends if you buy into, you know, a view of our constitutional structure where legislative power is vested in Congress, and Congress is the one that's making the major decisions that affect us at a federal level every day. So I think I will stop there.
Thank you for listening to Necessary and Proper. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play. To learn more about the Article I initiative, please visit fedsoc.org/articlei. That's fedsoc.org/articlei.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.